Welcome to Pop Psych 101,
where we, licensed therapist Ryan Engelstad
and licensed psychologist Dr. Haley Roberts,
break down and analyze how mental health is represented in movies, shows, books, and across the pop culture and social media landscape.
We will determine what lines up with real life and what is just pop culture fantasy.
This is Pop Psych 101. Welcome back to Pop Psych 101. I am licensed therapist Ryan Engelstad, here with my co-host, Dr. Haley Roberts.
Hello, hello.
Hello, Haley. We are back again for another exciting episode and, you know, playing around a little bit, hopefully today, as we get to cover something a little bit lighter, thanks to a friend of yours.
Yeah, Max.
Yes, shout out to Max.
Shout out to Max.
Because today we are covering a kids television show called Bluey. If you haven't heard of Bluey, we're going to tell you all about it. And you can pause and watch an 8-minute episode really quickly, because that's how long kids shows are today. Apparently, that's as long as the attention span that they have.
Yeah. Well, it's an 8 minutes that packs a punch.
Well, it does, right. Yeah. So, and that's kind of part of what we are noticing with not just this show, but maybe kids television in general these days, is they get into some real stuff way quicker than maybe you or I did as a kid. I don't know about you, but the shows that I was watching, you know, when I was my daughter's age, 4, 5, 6, was certainly not as emotionally insightful as it appears shows like Bluey and probably some other shows out there are.
Yeah, I think there were some of the more live actiony ones like Barney and things like that, where the intention was specifically to teach those things, but not in the same way that kids show these days are like, hey, by the way, we're teaching you. You just have no idea we're teaching you.
Right, right. It's it's like overt versus subvert, right?
Yeah,
like, are we sneakily teaching you a message? Are we sneakily making you think about these like very adult topics? Or are we just kind of bashing you over the head with them? And we'll get into Bluey, but you know, I remember, because when was, you know, you mentioned Barney, and I was like, I think I was too old for Barney. Yeah, I guess Barney was, I just looked it up, 92 to all the way to 2010. Good for you, Barney, making it all the way into the 2010s. So I would have been 8 when Barney was coming out. Yeah, I probably thought Barney was for babies, because by then I was already into
Spider-Man.
Ninja Turtles and Spider-Man and Transformers. And I wasn't here for Circle Time and Love Songs. I was into cool transforming stuff. But, you know, and you said when things got into like real life things, and I was thinking about shows that like, what was the first real life characters, real life people show that I watched? And like stuff like Boy Meets World.
Yeah, it was mine.
Okay, yeah. So I was trying to think of some other ones from that time period. And of course, now they all like come back. It's like, I guess Saved by the Bell was probably a little bit older, but all those kinds of shows where it's like, yeah, we're going to have a very special episode in which, you know, like the famous one was Saved by the Bell, is Jesse gets addicted to
speed.
But it was like, so it very quickly went from like distracting you with bright colors and music and explosions to here is a teenager dealing with drug issues. And there felt like there was no bridge between those two shows for me, probably.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Maybe that's why I'm a therapist.
Yes, I think that is the only
reason. Where did we go? How did we get here so quickly?
That's so funny. Yeah, I definitely, I was of the prime age for Barney. And then I was into Darkwing Duck and Tailspin and Rescue Rangers and DuckTales. I remember watching those every Sunday with my brother. Yeah. And then X-Men was my show. I loved Storm.
Totally.
And then, yeah. And then Boy Meets World. And I can't even really remember other TV shows around that time, because Boy Meets World was my show.
That was
every
enough.
Day after school for years. And to this day, I can talk to you about episodes of Boy Meets World.
Yeah. And of course, as I'm sure you know, now there's Girl Meets World and it's Corey's daughter.
Oh, I know. Actually, one of
just to make us feel extra old. Yeah,
I know. Yeah. I actually call my brother's daughter my niche, because Eric in Boy Meets World can never get the words niece and niche figured out, and he always uses the wrong one. And so I always call my brother's daughter my niche.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's funny to think back on how did those shows influence maybe our play, right? Because if I just wanted to take out my robot or ninja sword and chop and attack things, those were the games that I then wanted to play with my siblings, where it was like, can we be ninjas? Can we be robots? Let's fight each other. And I think, you know, shows like Bluey are clearly and encouraging a lot of different types of play and like self-awareness.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're going to get deep on all that stuff. So let's take a quick break here, and then we can dive deep into at least 1 8-minute episode of Bluey, if not more. We're going to go over and above an average episode of Bluey. So stick around for right after this break. Hey everyone, Ryan here. No ad this week, but a quick request. We would love to know where you follow us. So if you wouldn't mind taking 10 seconds while you're listening to today's episode, reach out to us on your social media of choice. Say hi, say what's up, request an episode topic. We would love to hear from you. And now, back to the episode. Pop Psych 101 discusses mental health as it is portrayed in pop culture media. And because of this, we often cover sensitive topics that can be triggering for some listeners.
We also delve into the characters and plots of these stories, and therefore, spoilers abound.
So please, use your discretion as you listen to the rest of the episode. Bluey is an animated children's television show currently streaming on Disney Plus. Each episode is about 8 minutes long, and it is into season two. I don't know. There are like 50 plus eight-minute episodes. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole healthy backlog. But we are specifically covering the episode called Copycat, which, Haley, is season one, episode 36?
38. So close.
38. So to give you a quick rundown, Copycat, like any sort of average parent and child day, starts out with Bluey and her father, Bandit. Bandit wakes up and immediately is, I wanted to say assaulted, because that's how I felt as the father watching him sort of bleary-eyed wake up, and all of a sudden it's playtime. Bluey doesn't wake him up, but Bluey immediately starts playing a sort of classic child's game, Copycat, with her father.
Yeah, Bluey is waiting there, ready to play this game.
Yeah, you sort of picture Bluey almost like sitting on top of him, waiting for his eyes to pop open.
Well, it's because she was sitting on top of him. Yeah, yes. Funny.
So immediately starts copycatting, and to Bandit's credit, Bandit kind of goes along with it. He makes it fun, makes it an active game. More or less takes Bluey outside. You know, if we're going to be playing this game that I can't imagine Bandit like thoroughly enjoys, it's like, okay, at least let me get my daughter some exercise. So he kind of does the Olympic walking style down the street. And unfortunately, they run into, in passing, after various hijinks, a budgie.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the neighbor. They've passed the neighbor, and that's why I giggled. They like pass a neighbor, and then he makes like a total fool of himself. And then Bluey just looks at the neighbor and shrugs like, I don't know what he's doing. And as soon as the neighbor's gone, she continues copycatting him, which is so good comedically.
Yes, another very relatable moment, because if you really get into play as a parent, especially out in public, can very quickly turn into like awkward glances from passersby. So I get the frustration probably that Bandit was experiencing this moment. Like, where did the play go? All of a sudden, I'm just the idiot. So they continue on down the street, and then they see a hurt bird under a tree. Maybe a bird that's been, as they say later in the episode, maybe attacked by a cat, maybe fallen out of the tree. We don't know. But immediately it takes them out of the sort of play scenario. So they see this bird, and okay, we've got to do something. So Bandit tells Bluey to get a shoebox and a tea towel, right? Mm-hmm. And another really cute moment of Bluey going into the kitchen and debating on which towel to take off the stove.
Uh-huh. Like the one with this picture or this picture?
Yeah, because it's that's what's those are the things that a kid would
think is important.
Sort of debate in that moment, right? Yeah.
I would have picked the same one as her, just by the way.
Yeah, it was a good choice, for sure.
Great choice, yeah.
So runs it back. They put the budgie into the shoebox. They bring it to the local vet. The vet takes it in, attempts to give it appropriate veterinary care. And unfortunately, the budgie doesn't make it. So we are seeing Bluey and Bandit cope with the loss of this bird that they just happened to come upon. And it's really interesting, as we were talking about before the break, the sort of seriousness in which they portray this loss, right? It's not just glossed over, okay, back to copycat. It's they take the time to actually kind of let Bluey process this loss. So now I had watched a ton of Bluey episodes, but I imagine this is one of the first or the first Bluey episode that you had seen.
This was the first one I had seen, yeah.
Okay. So as a person coming to this show fresh, what was your impression sort of with, you know, what feels like in some ways like how quickly they and seriously they kind of tackle this issue?
Well, although I hadn't seen a single episode before, I came in biased by Max's excitement about Bluey.
Of course.
So I was prepared to be like, yeah. But I was impressed. Like, I think that they were able to capture a lot in 8 minutes.
Yeah.
And it feels like it could be a 30-minute with commercials TV show for a 10-year-old as well, mm-hmm. except it's boiled down to 8 minutes for a younger child. And I think it was like handled really well, and it's really cute, and they've got their little Australian accents, which is fun. So yeah, I was impressed. So yeah, I really like it. I'm really impressed with it.
Yeah, that was my sense as well, is that, you know, you start watching these shows, these 8 minute episodes, especially back to back, because that's what kids do, is mm-hmm. you watch 5, 6, 7, 8 episodes of Bluey in a row to the point where you can memorize not just the intro theme song, but the individual dances that each character does.
Oh, funny.
And you kind of are starting to watch it as an adult going, wow, that, you know, it seems like they're just playing, but there's like a lot of levels to this stuff. So you start to kind of give the writers kudos, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I really love that you said that exact phrase. It looks like they're just playing, but there's a lot of layers to this stuff, because I think you can take that away from the show Bluey and just put it on the children that you know. Like, it looks like they're just playing, but actually what's happening is so layered, and that will actually be where the majority of our focus is probably this episode, is how play is more than just goofing off for children.
Absolutely. That's sort of where the episode takes the experience that Bluey is having, right? So Bluey, even in the car ride home, a little sort of stages of grief reenactment of he wants that budgie to not have died. Like, and are you sure, almost in denial, are you sure it won't get better? Even though they've just been told that the budgie didn't make it. And the dad sort of very calmly but directly said, no, the budgie's not going to make it. And when Bluey gets home, he gets a big hug. When Bluey gets home, she gets a big hug from her mom. Mm-hmm. And then we immediately go back into play. So comfort. And then Bluey is playing with her sister, Bingo. And immediately wants to reenact this whole day. Mm-hmm. And I found myself wondering, because as a parent, I'm like, yeah, that happens all the time. Mm-hmm. But I also find myself wondering, like, if you're not a parent and you sort of see this show sort of haphazardly, would that kind of come across as like, no, kids don't do that. That's so weird. But for me, it really felt like it kind of nailed it, which is I just went through this thing. Mm-hmm. And now, even if I'm not like talking about it anymore, I want to, I don't want to say relive it, but it's because in the play, in between Bluey and Bingo, Bluey wants to reenact it down to the words that her dad uses.
So yeah. So what I will say is you said you had a question, and let's go to that question. Then we can talk about what.
Yes. Really... Okay. Yeah.
So you said if a parent saw this, would they be like, oh my gosh, that's weird. And you're like, I think they nailed it. And I think you're actually speaking about two different things.
Okay.
I think nailed what children do. I think they absolutely nailed what we know about how children process the experiences in their lives that they don't totally understand, but they're working to understand. And I think the answer to your question is, would parents be like, what is my child doing? Yes. And
yeah. Okay. You're right. That's sort of more.
Yeah. And this episode, the mom was playing the vet in their game and came out and said, the budgie is fine, which is what I think most parents would do, is they'd be like, let's make it so that the budgie doesn't die. And then we can just be happy about it.
Retell the story and a happy ending.
Yeah. And I don't think that this show represented the role that a parent would probably play, right? Of like, let's fix it. Because when Bluey was like, no, I want to do it when the budgie dies, because that's how it happened, the mom goes, are you sure? Okay.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely like a really therapeutic way of doing it. And it's how a play therapist would do it.
Yes.
But I do think most parents would be like, no, let's make the budgie stay alive. I think most parents would encourage their child towards a happy ending. But what's great is in this episode, the mom does not do that. So then Bluey gets to continue processing.
Right. And we know that that's what's happening.
Yes.
Is that Bluey is, for her own sake, coming to terms with this experience.
Yes. And what's really cool about the way that they portrayed this episode is it's called Copycat. So it starts with her copying her dad, hopping on one foot and brushing his teeth and blah, blah, blah. But then as she starts to process this, as you mentioned earlier, she copies it down to the words that her dad said during the process of finding the budgie and taking it to the vet and things like that, which is, again, a part of her figuring out how to consolidate what happened in her brain, is like copying exactly what happened in her own controlled environment.
Yeah. And we have to probably acknowledge that that's what a big part of this sort of processing, acting out, playing is about, right? It is about control. It's, I want to be the adult now. I want to be my dad who handled it this way.
Yeah.
Or even, I want to be my dad who, you know, at least from Bluey's perspective, wasn't outwardly sad or outwardly, I guess he did sort of say something sort of acknowledging the sadness of the moment. Yeah.
In the vet's office, he really modeled what it is like to be nervous and worried.
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally.
In an appropriate way. Yeah. What I think is really cool and cute about A, how this happens, and B, how it was represented, is children will often take a different role in the situation. And the way that I kind of view it is, you know, when somebody like tells you how to do something, you go like, I get it, but I don't really understand, until you actually do it. And then you're like, oh, now it makes more sense. I kind of feel like this is the childlike version of that, of I saw what dad did and I experienced what dad did, but why did he do it? And how did it feel to do it that way? And what does it mean to be the person who makes those choices? And I think that's kind of why children will often take a different role, is to see a different part of that same experience. Like, what did this look like from dad's perspective? What did this look like from the person making choices? And oftentimes, going through it, kids are able to kind of create distance, but in like an understanding kind of a way of, if I talk about, no, now you're supposed to be scared, it now puts a word to, oh, right, in that moment I felt scared. Now, they don't have the language or the understanding to communicate that that's what they're doing. And that's why they're playing that way, is because what kids do know how to do is play and imagine.
Yeah, and it's in that imagining that the processing happens almost like unseen, right? Because, you know, and you mentioned play therapy before, like therapy with children, and for us this is obvious, but people might not always know, like if a child comes in to see a therapist or a play therapist, it is not going to be like your sort of standard in treatment.
How does that make you feel? Yeah.
It's going to be very different from that. And it is in many cases going to be encouraging and sort of playing out using their imagination, using imagery, using art, using things like a sand tray, which I can talk more about if people are curious, but things like that where it's like, okay, especially if a child has had difficult experiences, how can we create safety? How can we create confidence, you know, in these circumstances? Maybe through play, maybe through storytelling, all these different sorts of things. But it's a very different therapeutic process.
Yeah, it's a way different therapeutic process. And it's very metaphorical. So if a child is saying like, oh, the horse is going to the store and we don't know if the horse is going to come back, the therapist might say, oh, is somebody worried that the horse isn't going to come back? And the kid will be like, well, yes, the bunny is worried. And it's like, oh, how does the bunny know the horse? And it'll be like, oh, the bunny is the horse's daughter or son or something like that. And now you learn like, oh, perhaps, and it's not always a direct correlation. I'm really boiling it down, but perhaps this child has separation anxiety. Perhaps this child is worried, if my parent leaves, are they going to come back? And play therapy never happens on its own. There's always, will never say never, but play therapy often doesn't happen on its own. It often happens in collaboration with a parent.
Sure.
And by collaboration, I mean like speak to the parent independently and then do play therapy with the child independently. And you may find mom said last week that she'd be gone for 10 minutes and then she was actually gone for a couple hours and the child had to go to bed before mom got home. And then you're like, okay, so there's a little bit of fear of like, will mom be here when I go to bed? And then you speak to mom about how she can handle that differently to, you know, help with the knowledge and the fear of mom will come home. But the child can't say that and oftentimes doesn't explicitly remember that specific memory because memory doesn't form the same way at that age. However, when playing, the brain and the body know this experience of someone leaves and the child is worried about the person returning or the animal returning.
Yeah, I personally love all of that sort of metaphor work and play work. I think it's so valuable. And frankly, not just for kids. I mean, you know, I recognize that it shifts at some point. There's no specific age in which you would no longer do play therapy. But I think there's so much value in that. And frankly, even for adults, you know, we think about play being a very sort of childish, sort of make-believe, imagination-based thing. But you and I were talking before we started today's episode about things like improv, which is something that I indulge in, which is basically play, right? It's just sort of imagination scenarios or prompts, and then just sort of like running with wherever your imagination takes you, right? In an affirmative saying yes to whatever the other players, performers are doing. I think that's about as playful as it gets, right?
Yeah. And I think the cool thing is that is quite explicitly playing, right? That's quite explicitly having fun. And what I think is really cool is that play doesn't go away. It just looks different. So the one thing that I know about teenagers across the board is they like their music. Teenagers love their music. And oftentimes, if you ask a child or a teenager, like, who's your favorite artist or what's your favorite song at the moment? Or kind of similar to that play therapy thing, say, like, if you had to pick a song that kind of describes how you're feeling lately, what song would you pick? And then you go listen to that song. You're like, oh, okay, I get it. Like, I see.
Yep.
I see how you're representing these words that you can't find for yourself. And sports can often do that too. Road rage can do that as well. Like I don't think road rage is play, but like,
sure,
there are.
But it's the acting out, right? And acting out is not always obviously bad. It's something's happening internally, and then we are putting that out into the world in some other way.
Yeah.
If through play, through passive aggressive behavior, which, you know, more or less is or directly aggressive behavior.
Yeah.
So being able to be a person who recognizes, oh, that's what's happening now. And I think, you know, to get back to Bluey, that's what Bluey's mom does in that moment is, oh, you want to replay this exactly as it happened for you earlier today or yesterday or whatever the timeline was. And she just accepts it. And I think that that is, that validation is so important, because not only does she validate Bluey in that moment of, this is how you want the story to play out right now. Okay, I'm here, let's do it. But then later on, and as they continue to play, and Bingo continues to not play in the way that Bluey wants to, Bluey's mom, Chili, again validates and names Bluey's feelings.
Yeah.
I think she pretty much explicitly says, like, this isn't how you wanted the story to go, or this isn't how you wanted to play right now.
Yeah.
And you see the sadness coming out.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to explain to our audience, what happens is Bluey says to mom, no, the bird is supposed to die. And then Bingo, the little sister who is the bird, is like, look, I'm alive, and flies around. And Bluey's mom says, like, seems like Bingo didn't know. And then Bluey is a little bit disappointed that, wait, no, this is not how this went. But then what's really cool, and I think really well represented, is Bluey says something like, yeah, but that's okay. We don't always have control over how it ends, or something similar to that in child language. And dad pops over and says, like, oh, I just noticed you stopped copycatting me. And I was like, oh, brilliantly done, like, brilliant filmmaking right there, because that was not something that he had said to her. That was an understanding that she had come to herself in the process. And it's kind of what she needed to learn about death and disappointment and sadness, is that sometimes you don't have control over it. So does it always happen this succinctly? Sometimes, yes. Usually not. But like, a really cool thing that it got to go a little bit wrong, because it actually allowed a little bit of closure for Bluey.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden they're back to sort of non-acting out play, right? They're just back into copycatting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, back into just
play. And that can be like if that was like a curve where it's normal play, oh, something troubling or traumatic has happened. Now the play starts to represent that as we process our feelings. The feelings kind of hit their peak. They start to come down. Maybe they kind of come back up again as they're reenacting the experience. And Bluey is wanting things to happen a certain way, but is getting the comfort and validation of mom. And then the feelings kind of then start to pass, right? And I think that is such a powerful lesson, not just for kids, but for adults as well, that if you let the emotions happen, support them, validate them, name them, that that can be such an incredible tool in getting to the other side of the feelings, getting back to play, like, if that's the goal, right?
Yeah, getting back to living.
Yeah.
So something else that is not directly related to children learning through play. Again, this show, very well done. I'm super impressed. But what the show did was, so the vet comes and tells them the bird died. And then it zooms out so that we're outside the vet window, and all we can see is dad's shadow talking to Bluey, but we don't hear what's said. And what I really liked about that is it kind of represents that, like, there's no right way to explain this to your child. There's no, here's the script. Because in that moment, there literally was not a script. And what I think is really nice is, it A, didn't overstep by saying, this is how you tell, you know, explain this to your child. But it also represented that, like, there's not a perfect script for it. There's not a script for it at all. It's you understanding your child and doing your best. And then that child is going to go off and they're going to act it out and play in some fashion.
Yep.
And it's going to happen. And if they come to you and do ask or do have questions or do have the words for it, that's wonderful. However, most adults don't have the words for those things. So then it's really hard for children to have the words for those things, because they learn the words from their adults.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I think that's why we also see that sort of powerful reenactment of Bluey saying the solid, calm words that her father was saying throughout that experience. Mm-hmm. Because it's not like Bandit was, let's say, acting out as if someone who is experiencing road rage, right? Where it's like, or ignoring the moment, or just sort of like pretending that it wasn't a big deal. sort of being that sort of like solid, emotionally honest role, like modeling, right?
Yeah.
Modeling that it's okay to just sort of acknowledge what's happening, naming it, but also not ignoring it, just sort of staying with the moment.
And that modeling was so beautiful because I think one of the greatest disservices that we can do for our children is tell them to not be sad because they already are. And we do it so naturally. So your child comes to you and they're crying and you go, oh, sweetie, don't be sad. I don't know what to tell you. I'm already sad. Now all I'm thinking is that it's wrong that I'm sad, even though that response was said with compassion and said with love and said with support. What it does is it says, like, don't do what you're doing. Don't feel what you're feeling.
Yes.
And that makes it hard to bring to your parent when you are feeling sad because you're like, I'm not allowed to do this. And what was really nice about what Bandit, Bluey's dad, did was he was just like, yeah, I don't know if this is going to turn out well. I'm scared. And the animation, he was like a little bit fidgety as well in the vet office. I was like, shop? What's it called? The vet office. And I think that that was really a cool representation of like, I'm scared too. And I'm sad too. Yeah. And okay, be sad.
Yeah.
Because you are anyway.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So we've heaped all this praise on Bluey. And I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge some of the criticism of the show that does exist out there.
Yeah.
And I should point out, this is 100% criticism from the adults of or parents of the kids watching the show. Mm-hmm. The kids love it. It's light, it's fluffy, it's fun.
It's a great
show. I mean, my daughter copies so much of her play is directly, or at times when she was watching it regularly, like directly from the show, like little games and stuff, the things she would do. It's just like directly copied from the show. Mm-hmm. And the writers on it clearly intentionally, and even in an article that I'll quote here, acknowledges that he wanted to portray a healthy, modern version of a dad specifically. Mm-hmm. So Bandit is supposed to be basically the series creator, whose name is Joe Brum. He also is the father to two daughters, and he did a lot of work from home, and he wanted to represent the kind of father that he was, mm-hmm. you know, doing household chores, being a good dad, you know, showing up and playing with your kids, all these sorts of things. Because, and this is true, you know, he kind of points out, like, think of other dads in popular media, especially television, especially kids television.
Yeah.
If you were to just name one off the top of your head, what dad comes to mind?
That's so funny. The show Arthur came to mind, but I've literally never seen it.
Okay. So I'm pretty familiar with Arthur. Arthur's actually a pretty good example and a more modern example.
That's so funny. That's what
Arthur's dad from all my exposure is like pretty solid. Uh-huh. But, you know, another show that we've covered recently, Simpsons, been on for 30 years close to. Obviously, Homer Simpson is, you know, has become more emotionally complex in recent seasons. But he's known for like being kind of an idiot and, you know, strangling his son.
Yeah, yeah. And I think most shows, and this is absolutely changing. However, most shows represent mothers as the primary parent and fathers, and I use this word intentionally, babysit their children rather than parent their children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And not only are they babysitters, but they're sort of either like, you know, the sort of Homer Simpson example, or they're kind of like, I don't know if you have an exposure to Peppa Pig, which is another like huge current kids show.
Nothing but bad things about Peppa Pig from a psychology.
Well, and Daddy Pig is basically just like, how to describe him? He's like, he's good natured, but he's just kind of, like, it's like those terrible, so that's a good word for it. You know, like the made for TV products where the adults are always like jumbling all their Tupperware or like falling down the stairs. Like Pig can't read a map, like can't barbecue or make things without screwing thumbs up. Like he's always causing disasters, basically. So that's the spectrum of dads, right? Mm-hmm. There's like things in between. And now to have Bandit, who almost every single episode is like actively fully engaged in the imagination and play of his two daughters is like a huge switch from, I think, what people are used to.
Yeah.
So is that switch, you know, all the way other to the other side of the spectrum, while it's probably really cool for kids to see like their parents as friends, as playmates, is it can't be the only way that parents are portrayed.
Yeah. And what's so funny is, so I watched Copycat and then I watched two other episodes, 6 and 8 of the first season. And I totally had the thought, is there ever a moment where Bandit gets upset with the kids or does not play with them or gets some space with them in a like accurate representation of a parent? And also not only an accurate representation of a parent, but also to show children that their parents don't need to entertain them. They are able to play alone as well. And I asked you that before we started recording and you had an answer for me.
Well, yeah. So there is like one or two examples that come to mind for me. One is the actually the first episode of the whole series is called The Magic Xylophone, where Bandit like comes up with this game where they have a xylophone and hitting different notes does all these different magical things. And he's like fully into it, but obviously can't play forever. He has to leave. The kids continue the game, but because dad's not there, they're sort of fighting over it. And then dad gets back and it's, you know, all we see is dad playing, dad going presumably to work. And by the way, he's a paleontologist because he's a dog. So he's into bones, right?
Oh,
yeah.
Geez.
Yeah.
I'm on board.
And gets back and immediately is kind of thrust back into play. Mm-hmm. And so that's one example. And the other example was one of the other episodes that I shared with you, where it's basically dad's playing, finally gets the kids to bed. And then the next we see of dad is that he's just asleep hugging his rugby ball and like acting out the play that he wishes he could do. And mom even acknowledges like, yeah, well, dad doesn't get really time to play with his, you know, play rugby anymore, play with his friends. And we don't actually see that addressed outside of Bluey's dream sequence, in which it's like, oh, like Bluey gets to dream about dad going to play rugby with his friends, but it doesn't actually happen. And I think that's sort of my and certainly other parents that I've talked to with concern. It's like, well, why can't the sort of moral of that episode be like, hey, dad, like me and my sister are going to play on our own. Like you go play rugby or something. Like can't, and not that kids are supposed to have that much awareness, you know, at that very young age, but it would be nice if the parents were also like had
their own lives.
Boundaries where they didn't have to be the playmate all the time, I guess is what I'm saying. Yeah, I don't know.
I completely agree. And even what's interesting is the magic xylophone one that you described. What I hear from that is play only works when dad's here. So, you know, when dad wasn't here, we couldn't figure it out ourselves, but that's okay. We'll wait until dad gets home and then he'll play with us again and he'll fix it. And then I think it's really important to teach children that they can play alone. So first and foremost, play with your children. I think that's the first rule. I'd rather you default in that direction. However,
of course,
also teaching your children, A, that you have boundaries and that in return, they are allowed to have boundaries, and B, that they can play alone actually teaches them independence. So if they kind of create this idea that play only works if dad's here, then they don't learn how to structure the magic xylophone without him. They don't learn how to create it themselves. They don't learn how to play on their own. And so I also a little bit was like, okay, but if a parent doesn't have their own life, then they're not putting on their metaphorical oxygen mask either. If dad's not going and playing rugby or hanging out with his friends at least once in a while, and it's always about only playing with his children, he's going to get to a burnout point because children are wonderful, but also they're children. Like imaginary play is not as fun and exciting and fulfilling for adults as it is for children. And so you can't spend your whole day there as a parent.
Yeah. And it's funny, especially that my daughter watched this in the first time we got into Bluey was in like the first months of the pandemic, where I was home with her all day, every day. So it's like, oh, let's build forts. Let's build Legos. Let's play freeze tag. Let's play magic xylophone. And it, I mean, there was nothing else for my wife and I to do with her at certain points. It's just like, okay, now, and like, you don't want to, but at certain points, okay, this teacher on this Zoom is going to do something with you for half an hour. But that's the reason why. It's that as much as we are happy that our child wants to play with us, we also want her to want to and be able to play on her own, play with others, and not have any of those be, let's say, seen as like the lesser of any of the other options. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Not lesser, just different. And I also have seen like with a lot of adults, they feel like they have to have an excuse as to why they don't want to play. And this may be a point of argument, but my personal belief is that you don't need an excuse. You can just say like, hey, I'm not playing right now, but why don't you go build Legos? And then when you're done, come grab me and show me what you built. So what you've said there is, no, I'm not going to play right now. And quite frankly, I don't want to, but you wouldn't say it that way. And you are capable of going and playing by yourself and to a point where at the end of it, I can come and join in and see what you've done and be like, this is amazing. You did this all by yourself. Oh my gosh. So cool. Tell me about it. What does this do? What's this room? And it's still quote unquote playing with your child, right? Because you're not just like go in the other room and I don't care what happens, but you are also saying, no, I'm not doing this right now. And you don't need me to do like you may. Yes. It's always more fun to play with somebody else or, and particularly more fun to play with your parent because oftentimes parents will lead the play and parents have more ideas because they've lived more. But I think there's so much power at a certain age, and it's basically the preschool age, in saying, go and play independently and then tell me about it later. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I love that suggestion. And it's interesting because so in this article, and look, and I wanna be very upfront here. Like, I'm not mad that my daughter wants to play with me. Like,
Certainly not. No.
It is a gift. Yeah.
And also you're, and what I'm trying to say here is like, definitely play with your children. However, like,
Oh my gosh. Absolutely.
At some point you just don't want to, you know, all day, every day is exhausting. Like you get to cook dinner or answer a phone call or watch the rugby or cricket game, like Bandit wanted to.
Yeah. And that's why I think the balance as it continues to shift, it's just important for us to pay attention to. Because I work with a lot of parents, and especially in the times that we're dealing with in the pandemic, boundaries are even sort of harder to come by, right? People are working at home. Kids are doing school from home. So that sense of like, well, at least I get to go in my car, then I go away to work. And then like I build myself back up to come back home and, you know, pick the kid up from school or then we get to go play or do something. Like at least that transition kind of helps me prepare for that adjustment. Yeah. But now it's just like home is work and is play and is school.
Yeah.
So it's much harder for everyone. And it's not just hard for the parents, like the kids are also struggling with a lot of that adjustment as well.
Absolutely. I also want to make it clear that I also, and I think I did make this clear, but I want to say it again, like play with your children. Like if 100%. You're going to use what I just shared as like an out to not play with your children, then I want to make it very clear that that is not at all what I was saying, but also like giving them opportunities to learn how to be independent as well as taking care of yourself.
Yeah. We're sort of acknowledging the sort of other side of what I think we both agree is a really great show. And it's really great that kids can see these positive examples of parents playing, because that's another thing that's great from those sorts of examples. It's like, it might start really healthy conversations. It might start really great imaginative play for your kids. So this is a way more a positive thing than a negative thing. I think, you know, it's just sort of acknowledging, because I think that, and that's why we do this show. It's like, hey, here's a portrayal of a thing that, you know, is parallel to mental health, parenting, responding to trauma as a human being, mm-hmm. play. Mm-hmm. And is that being portrayed with a specific specific intent? Is it just being portrayed for entertainment value? If that's the case, is there any downside to it just being portrayed for entertainment value? Mm-hmm. And that's where we're sort of exploring these topics. And I think it's that's why I personally love these conversations, because it's like, oh, isn't it fascinating how kids and adults respond to this show in such different ways, mm-hmm. you know, across the board. So
do they
so, yeah,
respond that differently? Stuff. Because I'm super into this show.
So so I'll say this. Compared to a lot of children's television, this is like cream of the crop. This uh-huh. is very good. That being said, it's still children's television. Yeah. So as the parent, it's like, oh man, another Bluey episode. Like as soon as you hear the first two chords of the, uh-huh. you know, the song, like even if you know it's like great examples and great imagination, it's like, oh man, like if my kid comes running in here trying to freeze me with the magic wand again, like yeah. I'm going to lose it.
Like, yeah, totally.
That's what it is.
Okay.
You know, just like I've talked to parents who hate other kids' television shows, uh-huh. you know, whether it's Coco Melon with the little kids or
I think the
God,
repetition,
there's a lot of really
the,
weird stuff out
the
there.
The repetition of yeah, anything yeah. gets frustrating.
Yep. Yep. For sure.
But is also built to fire very specific synapses in a child. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So, so I'll share this because this is sort of a personal experience with this. So my daughter, Bryn, has watched shows like Bluey where they deal with very real issues. And then we as parents are like, oh, that's great that she's able to you know, talk to us about, you know, if someone or something dies. And then it's like, oh, now she wants to watch, like you and I were talking about Boy Meets World. Like she has watched Girl Meets World and she's uh-huh. watched The Babysitter's Club, where it's like progressively more and more real uh-huh. dramatic issues, right? Yeah. And then, and again, I should point out she's six and it's like, oh, I want to watch Twilight, or she saw like a Spider-Man trailer or something. And it's like, okay,
not
at
yet.
What point? Yeah. Right. And that's the decision both as a parent of like, yes, it's good for them to be exposed to these things and for these conversations to be able to happen. Do you expose it? Do you let them sort of make that decision? And it's like, yeah, I'm ready for this, even though it's that's a good example of like, this is for entertainment purposes. Like, this is basically a soap opera. Uh-huh. Like, this is not made for you to handle what's being portrayed as like a growing child. That's when the parents then have to, I think, make well-informed decisions yeah. on what your kids can handle, but yeah. you also want your kid to know what they can handle. So it's yeah. a really tough line to walk.
So my response to that is there is no topic that a child cannot handle.
Sure.
However, there is a age-appropriate way to have the conversation with the child.
Right.
Right. So yep. if your daughter, you said she's six.
Yeah.
So if she were to go and watch like the new live action Spider-Man, if
sure.
somebody or something were to die in that, that looks very different than the bird dying in mm-hmm. Bluey. So
that's going to be handled very differently. Yeah.
Yeah. I do not think that her little socio-emotional brain is ready for death in that form. However, communicated to her the way that Bluey communicated it is perfect. And
yeah,
and
yeah.
I think like I've heard things like, oh, my child's too young to understand racism. And it's like, no, like black children understand racism real young. So white children definitely yep. can too. Or
for sure.
death or childbirth or a lot of things that kids often have questions about. Parents will be like, oh, the stork brought them. And it's like, no,
sure.
like explain to them what happens, mm-hmm. you know, like a baby grows in mommy's tummy, you know, you don't have to be like, well, mom yep. has a uterus. And
right, right. Yeah.
And I think that that's really important is yes, children should be able to kind of figure out what they can handle. But also when you're growing up, you think you can handle more than you actually can. And I remember mm-hmm. I saw a movie when I was like 13 or 14 that was rated R, and I was not traumatized by it, but I also wasn't totally ready to watch it either. And I remember going to bed that night being very uncomfortable because I didn't really understand what was happening. So the movie was Cruel Intentions.
Yeah.
So like, it's not, it's not a bad movie by any means, but it's just like, there's a lot of like sex related conversations and topics. And I just like, I didn't fully get it. But also, I was also like 13 or 14, so I like understood what they were talking about, but like the relational interactions between them were very confusing to me. And so I remember just like going to bed that night being like, I don't exactly understand what happened. And I often think about that of, do I think it's bad that I saw it? Absolutely not. However, I'm like, that's why there's ratings. Like, this is why there's ratings on things.
Well, yeah, and it's such an interesting dilemma for a parent, because I totally get parents who are like, you want to watch that? Sure, I'll let you watch it. And then if you're like upset or confused by it, we can talk about it. Mm-hmm. And then I also understand the parents who are like, no, you cannot watch that. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can handle it. You can watch it, you know, when I think you're ready. But, you know, also knowing myself as a child, like the things that I was told I wasn't ready for were the things I wanted to most know what they were about.
Yeah.
So it's an important conversation to be able to validate that curiosity and that interest. Yeah. Well, I was just gonna say, because it's like, you know, as the parent, you're like, oh, okay, you want to watch X. If my answer is no, I need to have some justification, because there's one thing that I know for sure with working with kids, and that is because I said so is not effective.
Totally. It's not. I think like if your child comes to you and says, oh, dad, I'd like to see the Spider-Man movie. And you say, what about it do you want to see? And if she's like, I don't know, I just think it would be cool. A conversation you can have is, okay, how about I watch it first? And then we can talk about whether you watch it. And then you come and say like, so I'm not comfortable with you watching it. And here's why. Children are so much more willing to listen to you if you have an explanation rather than like you said, the because I said so.
Yep.
And you can also kind of say like, okay, I'm a little bit uncomfortable with you watching it. But now that I've seen it, if you really want to watch it, you can watch it. And then know that, like, you can come talk to me about it if you have any questions or you're concerned.
Or, like, we can watch it together. Like, there's the conversation about it is actually pretty valuable, much in the way the conversation that Bluey has with her mom after the play attempt is really valuable. I mean, we can – if this conversation went very differently, like – if Chili, Bluey's mom, was like, well, I'm not going to have your daughter – die in this game, like if you just would have rejected it and shut it down, and it's just like, and it was just like, Bluey, like, we're not playing that way. You know, you could see the sort of emotional blockage kind of start to happen, right, where it's like, oh, but I don't understand, or why, or I just want to talk about it, or I'm just playing. And all of a sudden it becomes thing where it's like, well, we're not talking about it, or we're not dealing with this, or not that way, or not in the way that you want. And that now it's a very different emotional response to this event. And that's why these conversations, interactions are so important.
Are so important. And if the mom had done that, it would have, like you kind of said, like, I wanted the things I was kind of told I wasn't allowed to. If mom was like, no, we're not doing it that way, that emotional blockage would have happened. It also would have made it so much more of a more confusing, bigger deal, because Bluey would have been like, but that's how it happened. So why... like, why, you know, like the don't be sad. Well, like, I'm already
sad. What was wrong about the way it happened? Yeah, like, yeah, you start to question it for sure. Yeah.
Instead,
yeah,
mom let it happen and then it ran its course. And then they kind of just moved on in a really appropriate way. And kids do that. They totally do that. They move on once their brain has processed it enough. If they have outlets for processing it, and sometimes it requires learning skills, which is why taking children to therapy is wonderful. But yeah, I think you're totally right. Like, it was meaningful that it wasn't like, no, we're not doing it that way. Let's figure out how to do it together. And definitely for younger children, you'll edge more towards let's do it together. And then as they hit like preteen teens, it'll be like, I'll do it and you do it. and then we can talk about it. Because there are just certain things like Cruel Intentions. If my mom had been like, let's watch Cruel Intentions together, I would have been so mortally scarred.
Right. That's not exactly the compromise you were looking for. Yeah. Right. Yeah. But yeah, so you know, it can go in so many different directions. And obviously you and I can go in so many different directions, even with just 8 minutes of content. So I think we should keep challenging ourselves. How short of a content source can we do a whole episode on? If you guys have other ideas, a TikTok.
Oh my gosh.
A YouTube video. Like, what else could we do? Maybe we need to go under 5 minutes. We'll see.
I accept this challenge.
But for this one, we should definitely stop here.
I agree.
So let's do some reviews for Bluey. So we didn't talk about this beforehand, so I'm just going to throw it at you.
Okay.
So let's see. Haley, on a scale of 1 to 5 Big Ben tea towels.
That's what I was going to choose.
Well, too late.
That's so funny. What are the odds? Because that's not the one she goes with. It's the other one. That's so funny.
It's the other one.
Okay.
How accurate do you feel like this portrayed a healthy emotional processing or response to a loss? Because that's sort of what this is for the first time for Bluey.
Yeah. So on a scale from 1 to 5 Big Ben tea towels, I give this episode like a 4.5 an accuracy, because it really portrayed how children use play to process the experiences that don't make sense to them or that are new to them. And it showed how they model from the adults in their lives. So she copied what her dad did to try to understand what was happening. I also think it did a really good job of portraying good therapeutic parenting as well. And so, yeah, I think it did a good job representing therapeutic parenting. I don't know that it did a good job representing parents worrying about their children's mental health and processing.
Okay, sure.
Because mom was just like, are you sure? Okay, fine, whatever. This is not how you wanted it to turn out. Okay. Like, I think it would have been a little bit more like, are you sure that's how you want to play it? Okay, it's not scary, you know, because I think.
Like a little bit more sort of emotional reflection.
Yeah. I think even you and I, who are therapists, when it comes to like the children in our lives, we are way more like, I want to protect you. I don't want you to process. like, I don't want you to have to process. Yeah. And so it didn't super represent that. But I think overall, 4.5. It was great. It was a good 8 minutes. Max was right.
Nice. Well, thank you again to Max. Yes. Yeah.
So I'm thinking there might be somebody better than you to rate how entertaining it is. Would you agree?
I would absolutely agree. And I happen to have someone here who would love to share her opinion on the entertainment value of Bluey. So if you stick around after we end the episode, you will have a review by the one and only Bryn of what she thinks of Bluey, because who better to give you the entertainment value than who the intended audience of this show is for.
Excellent. So please follow us at PopPsych101 on the socials. And we now have a Patreon that we would love you to support us on, where we'll have bonus content. Anything else?
No, that is more than enough. We are we're stretching our time limit here. So thank you all so much for listening. As always, please, as Max did, feel free to suggest other shows and movies for us to cover. We'll do more kids stuff. We'll do more silly stuff. Happy to play around here. Thank you for listening. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Bye.
Bye. So, Bryn.
Yes.
We are talking about the episode of Bluey called Copycat, right?
Yes.
You saw that episode?
Yeah, I just saw it.
You just saw it?
Yes.
And how entertaining, how much do you like watching the show Bluey? On a scale of 1 to 5. 5 being the best show ever.
So I would say it's like a 4 for me.
Okay.
Like, yeah.
And what makes it a 4? What do you like about the show Bluey?
Probably how funny some of the characters are, mm-hmm. and how funny some of the kids are. And I really like the teachers and the friends and the designs on them.
And what lesson do you think this episode was trying to teach?
I think it was trying to teach something that recently happened to me.
Oh, really? What?
It's okay to be sad when somebody dies.
Yeah, it sure is.
Because the bird mm-hmm. died because it got knocked around by the cat yes. and it didn't get care quick enough.
Right. So, and then Bluey, like, acted it out with her sister, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, what did you think about that?
I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah. Do you think it helped Bluey feel better?
Yes.
Does play help people feel better, you think?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good lesson.
But we didn't play the play what happened to the next door.
No, we didn't play that out. Do you want to play that out?
No.
Okay. So some things you can play about, some things you don't.
Yeah, some things you do definitely not want to play about this one.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
Well, any favorite characters or any favorite jokes that you like from Bluey?
They don't really do jokes. Like,
what's your favorite game that Bluey plays with her dad?
Bobby the horsey ride one where they had to get married.
The ones where Bluey's dad and Bluey's dad's friends have to pretend to be horses that are getting married.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good episode.
That one is the funniest.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming on my show to talk about Bluey.
All right.
Anything else you want to say?
You forgot something. What's your favorite character?
Oh, what's your favorite character? Who's your favorite character in Bluey?
Probably Bingo.
Bingo? So you like Bluey's little sister Bingo?
Yeah, but I have a couple favorite characters.
Okay. Anyone else you want to shout out?
I can't really remember her school, the kids at her school named, okay. But I like those characters.
All the kids at school.
Not all of them.
Just some of them.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you think about Bluey's dad? Is he a good dad?
Yeah, he's a very funny dad.
He's a funny dad. And he's really good at playing with.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Well, thanks for coming on the show.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye.